And I like it when my wife wears pearls. She doesn't have many. Probably is never going to have many. But I just think she just looks good in pearls. And if you think about how pearls are made, it's not really a pleasant process. You know how it begins? You have an oyster in a shell. But somehow, maybe a little grain of sand off the bottom of the ocean floor, that grain of sand, maybe with the moving of the current, is washed and it gets into the oyster shell. And that oyster begins to try to get that little grain of sand out because it's an irritant. And he'll secrete a chemical and it'll begin to try to isolate that little grain of sand. And then he'll do more and more. And over the course of time, that little irritant becomes a beautiful pearl. If the oyster had its choice, the grain of sand would never be inside. But yet after that process, something beautiful is made. I think that we can see that in Paul's message to us today. I want us to look at verse 7, and that's where we'll begin reading. And lest I should be exalted above measure. In other words, if I get puffed up, if I were in high school, I might say something like this, and lest I get the big head. All right? Above measure through the abundance of the revelations. Now, what are the revelations? Do you realize that the Apostle Paul had more revelation than probably any other apostle or person in Christian history? Now, John the Revelator had quite a few himself. But if you look at the books of John the Revelator, he wrote the gospel. He wrote the three little epistles that bear his name. And of course, he wrote the Revelation. But if you look at the Apostle Paul's writing by volume, it is much, much, much more than John's. And depending on whether you give him Hebrews or not, he wrote roughly, about two-thirds of the New Testament. At least half of it. And so when you begin to think about the Apostle Paul and the revelations that he received, there are times when he had a vision. There are times when he had experiences. And nobody ever had them like he did. Would that not give him cause to be puffed up? And so he said, and lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. For this thing I besought the Lord thrice or three times, that it might depart from me. And he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in mine infirmities and reproaches and necessities and persecutions and distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. I want to give you three thoughts this morning from our text. Number one, Paul said, I have pain. I have pain. If you look at verse 7 and 8, he'll say, I have a thorn. Now, most of us, when we think of a thorn, we think of some little splinter that maybe we've had. Maybe you've been having a project at your house. Maybe you built an addition to your house, or you're out in your shop, and maybe you're working on a dresser. Maybe something that you've had to maybe plane a little bit or sand a little bit, and all of a sudden there's a splinter that goes into your hand. And there are times when they're almost nothing, and then there's times when it's like, man, that is bad. I worked with a man named Tucker when I was a young man. He taught me what I know about carpentering as far as basic carpentry. He taught me what level was and what plumb was and what square was and how to square a building and that type of thing. And if you would get a splinter in your hand, he would say, oh, that's nothing. He said, that is just a baby. But if he got one in his hand and we began to razz him, he said, oh man, said, that's not a baby splinter. He said, that's like a 2x4 in my hand. And it was a joke. And if he would get a piece of sawdust in his eye, he would say, oh, I got a 2x4 in my eye. And if we got something in our eye, he'd say, oh, that's just a speck. And he would just kid back and forth like that. He was one of the most fun men I've ever been around in my life. Probably a decade ago, I had the privilege of preaching his funeral. Not that it's always a privilege to preach a funeral, but when a man has preached it himself, and then he goes to be with the Lord, there's just some funerals that are easier to preach than others. Well, he had pain. There was a thorn in his flesh. May I say that the word for thorn is the idea of a stake? I'm not talking about a little small splinter that you walk around with and that you could take your pocket knife out and actually cut it out yourself. No, this is something that's big. This is something that you're going to need some help with if you're going to have any alleviation from the pain. And so he had to live with this. You say, well, how do you know that he had to live with it? Well, the Bible tells us that he asked the Lord 3 times to remove it. And he kept going back 1 time, 2 times, 3 times. And you know, sometimes when we go back and we ask the Lord over and over and over again, you know, we're just thinking, well, I mean, one of these days he's going to answer that. Well, do you know, he may have already answered it by saying no. You know, sometimes the Lord says yes, and sometimes the Lord says wait, but sometimes he just says no. And so you've got Paul, and he asked the Lord 3 times to take this stake that he is suffering with, to take it away from him. Now, somebody asked the question, preacher, what was his thorn in the flesh? Can I say right off the bat, nobody knows? Now, there's all kind of speculation that's out there. There's one Scottish commentator, and he says that it was his wife. Well, you know, I don't know about that. You know, somebody says, do you think Paul was married? I think he probably was at one time. And I think probably his wife passed away, and he never remarried. You say, well, why do you believe that? Well, because he was very high up in the Sanhedrin. I mean, he had been a Pharisee from early on, and one of the things that Pharisees did was they thought it was important to have a wife. And so I think it's, you know, it's possible that he could have been married. Now, would I bet my salvation on it? Not a chance. You know, and so one Scottish guy said, well, I think it was his wife. Somebody else says, well, I think it's his eyesight. You know, if you read apocryphal literature, which very few of Baptists do, there's one apocryphal book that says that he met a woman in Iconium, and he said he was smitten with her, and he was just constantly lusting after her. Well, there's nothing biblical to prove that, and so, you know, it's speculation on whoever put that in that apocryphal book. And so you've got that as a thought. I think the one that has probably the most validity is the fact that he might have had bad eyesight. The reason I say that is because in Galatians chapter 4, it says, "See how large of letters that I write unto you?" There are times when the Apostle Paul would have a secretary that would take dictation and he would begin to tell that person what to write. But in Galatians, he wrote it with his own hand. And he said, "I have written these large letters." In other words, he was not writing in a number 8 font style or size. He would have been writing like maybe I print my notes out in a 16 or a 17 font style. In other words, I want it larger. I was showing somebody some Bibles in my office not long ago. And I said, "This is a Bible that I got at such and such time. And this is the Bible that I got at such and such time." And then I said, "And this is the Bible that I preached that of for about 25 years. And I said, "It's got all kind of notes in it. And I would love to be able to take this Bible and still use this Bible." And it was like, "Well, why don't you do that?" And I said, "Because I can't read it. The print is too small." And so now I have a Bible that's got large print. Now, it's not the largest print that is available, because the New Testament would look like the old time family Bibles, right? But he said, "You see how large a letter I write unto you." And so some people think that it was his eyes, but I can tell you this, I think that there is a physical aspect to it and a spiritual aspect to this thorn in the flesh. Look with me at verse number 7. In verse number 7, it says that there was a thorn. Where does it say it was at? In his flesh. And so therefore, if it's in the flesh, it's physical. All right? So, was it his eyesight? Did he have some type of deformity with his eyes? Some people say that he was bug-eyed. Some people say he was bow-legged. You know, I don't know. One of the fine men in our church gave me a book a year or so ago, and it was a fictional book. And may I say that that book had me hooked from about the first page? And it was supposedly a fictional account based on everything that we know about the Apostle Paul from the time he was born until his death. And you know, one of the things that grabbed me at the beginning of that book, it started off by talking about Saul, which was his pre-Christian name. Saul, he was an ugly baby. Nobody says the baby's ugly. But in that book, he was an ugly baby. That had me captivated, and I love that book. It was a book by a lady named Taylor Caldwell. And I'm telling you, there's all kind of speculation, but this guy had a physical thorn. But there's something else in our passage. Look at verse 7 again. And it says, "The messenger of Satan." So therefore, he is spiritually being attacked. And possibly these two things, the flesh and the spirit, are being, I guess, working in tandem with one another. And they're attacking him. And so he is being buffeted. And by the way, the word buffeted in our passage, it has the idea of hitting with a fist. Do you remember when Jesus was taken before the high priest? Do you remember how they were slapping him? Oh, it wasn't just with an open hand. Oh, no. I mean, they were putting the knuckles to him. And if you look at those passages, you don't find Jesus having some kind of slap with a little glove on. They weren't trying to just offend him, you know, publicly. No, no, they wanted to beat him. And so they would take that fist and they would just drive it into his jaw. And then the Romans came along and the Romans did the same thing. And they would mock him. They would play the king's game with him. You say, what is that? I may show this tonight. But in the Praetorium over by the fortress of Antonio, there's a place that they have now marked off. And it's marked off on the floor. And you can see where carved out on the floor is like a game board. And it's like divided, like you would divide a pizza. And they would roll something like dice. And if it hit on a certain one of those slices, it would be beat him with a scourge. If it landed on another one, hit him with your fist. If it was another one, slam the thorns down on him. And they were making like he was a king. And then the last thing they would do is they would rip the coat off. They would take him and make him carry his own crossbeam, and they would go out and they would crucify him. And so you have Jesus being buffeted. And now Paul, with the same word, is being pummeled by this thorn in the flesh, by this messenger of Satan. But there's a second thing that the Apostle Paul said. Not only do I have pains, but he said, I take pleasure. Now this is weird in our thinking, but look with me at verse number 10. Therefore, because of what I've just said, I take pleasure. In other words, I look back on what has taken place at me, and I think it's beautiful. At the time, did I enjoy it? Oh, no, 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 no. But oh, I look back on it now, and I am glad for the things that I've had to go through. And then he gives us five things in verse number 10. If you look at verse number 10, he said, I take pleasure in infirmities. You say, well, what is an infirmity? Well, it's a constant pain. I mean, he is hurting physically every day. If I were to ask you to raise your hand, how many of you hurt every day? There's no doubt that at least half of this congregation would raise their hand and they would say, my arthritis bothers me every day. My back bothers me every day. My muscles bother me every day. It's a constant pain. And I say, the older we get, it seems as though the more they hurt every day. You know, I mean, sometimes when I'm out at my shop, trying to fix something that a grandkid broke, working on a lawnmower, and I'm laying down on the floor, all I'm thinking is, now, how far am I going to have to roll on this floor to find something to help me get up? Amen. I mean, there's times when it's like, set a folding chair over here so I got something to hold on to. My youngest girl has bought her a house. And of course, with buying a house, I'm just not going to move in it. It's got to be remodeled. Dad, you've got to help me remodel. So yesterday I went over and I was doing some drywall mudding. And I'm telling you, I was up and down on that floor. And I got to the point where I'm thinking, my hips are killing me. And so I told her, I said, we need to go down to the big box store. And on the way out, I got a diet Dr. Pepper because I'm concerned about my physical appearance. I got me a Tylenol. She's like, you okay? And I said, yeah, I just got to have a little pain help here. And so the older we get, the more we have a constant pain. He lived with this. He lived with it. He had infirmities, and he said, I take pleasure in that. Can I say that I'm still learning, trying to do that? I mean, I'm still trying, but it's hard. But he also goes on to say that not only does he take pleasure in infirmities, but he takes pleasure in reproaches. You say, what does that mean? Insults. How many of you would like to go someplace and have somebody constantly getting in your face and insulting you. I mean, they're talking about you, maybe with your appearance. Maybe they're talking to you about your religion. Maybe they're talking to you about the fact that they don't like your kid. Maybe they're talking about, you know, you because you don't have maybe what they think is their status in life. And you're just constantly insulted. I mean, it's just one criticism after another. And so he was taking pleasure in those reproaches. He said this. He said, I take pleasure in necessities. What's the big deal if I miss a couple of meals? That's his life. Does he not say in Philippians, I know how to abound and I know how to be abased. I know how to have much and I know how to go without. No matter whatever state I'm in, I find myself content. I'm okay. And so he said, I take pleasure in my necessities. If I don't have enough to eat today, that's okay. I needed a diet. God will take care of my needs. And so when necessities came along, and he looks in his pocket, and there's no place that'll take any more credit. He doesn't have any money. And he goes, well, it's crackers and peanut butter time. I'm okay with that. I like crackers and peanut butter. And so in necessities, he took pleasure. Not only that, but he took pleasure in persecutions. Now, that's not something that you and I like a lot. We don't like persecutions. I want you to hold your place in here in Corinthians, and I want you to flip over to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5. Jesus is preaching what is called the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount. Do you remember when he's preaching this, inside of the Sermon on the Mount, he has nine little things called the Beatitudes. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are the meek. Those, you remember those? When you get done with that, the last one, and I thought I was over this sinus deal, but evidently I'm not. But when he gets to the last one, I want you to pick up with me at verse 11. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. In other words, if you're living for me and they're doing this to you, just remember, you're blessed. He says, if they're doing that to you for my sake, what does verse 12 say? Rejoice. Be happy about it. Who wants to put up with that? Evidently, Paul. He said, I take pleasure. I get joy from these things. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. And so he said, I want you to be a person that takes pleasure like I do in infirmities, reproaches, necessities, persecution. But he also says, number five, in distresses. Distresses. What is that? When you get into a tight, when you get into a narrow place. A couple of weeks ago when I was in Israel, I met a preacher from South Florida. He was in my group that I navigated through the airports. His name's Bob. And every time I saw him, all I could think about was the movie many years ago called What About Bob? All right. And so Bob and I became friends. And I talked to him this week, and he was just still, I mean, he was still traveling in that manner that we got 2 weeks ago. And I was telling him, I said, now you see that stairwell right over there? And we were over near the pool of, I think it was Pool of Siloam. And he said, yeah. And I said, you know what comes out there? He said, no. I said, Hezekiah's tunnel. He said, what is that? I said, that's a place you don't want to go. He said, what's it like? I said, well, I went there about 3 years ago. And I said, let me tell you about it. It's about this wide. And it's about this tall in some places. Now, he's not as wide as I am, but he was about 3 inches taller than I am. And I said, it's all uphill in both directions. He said, well, what was it? I said, Hezekiah had this tunnel built and had it on the outside covered up where that it wouldn't look like a well and a spring, and that brought fresh water in so that when the enemy was trying to get in to Jerusalem, they would be able to repel them, but they would have fresh water. I went through that, and I had to walk through it down like this, turn like this, and I mean, it's like a half a mile. I swore at that time I'd never go through that tunnel again unless I had a grandkid stuck in it. And I told him, I said, you don't want to go. I said, it's tight. Well, that's just a little picture. That's just a little metaphor of how we all get it sometimes in our life. I mean, you've written bills out. You've still got four or five to go, but there's no more money in the checkbook. You're in a tight. I mean, you've got another week to go, and you open the cabinets, and there's nothing in there, not even peanut butter and crackers. You're in a tight. You got a boss, and you've been trying to work hard, but maybe he just don't like you. And you're thinking, I may lose my job any day now. I mean, all of us get in tights for various things. Sometimes we may be in a tight and we're up at a hospital praying to the good Lord that our child's going to live. You're in a tight. And he said, I have learned to take pleasure even in distresses. And let me tell you something. He knew all about distresses. He knew about shipwrecks. I mean, he'd been in some. He knew about beatings and stonings. He was stoned one time at a place called Lystra. And they thought he was dead, so they just left him there underneath a rock pile. And finally, after they all dispersed, maybe when the cool of the night began to set, maybe he was able to revive. Or it could be, some people think that maybe he died and the Lord resurrected him. Only thing I know is this, he was in some tight places. One time he literally was in a basket about the size of a laundry basket, and they had to let him down in Acts chapter 9 with a rope on the outside of a wall. He was in a tight. And we get in those kind of places. But he said, I take pleasure in those things. Let me give you the third and final thing today. He said, not only do I have pains and not only do I take pleasure, but he said, I have power. Now, he didn't have power in his own self. Oh, no. None of us have the kind of power in ourselves that he's talking about right here. Look with me at verse 9. And he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee. In other words, I'd ask him three times and he said, no, you're going to bear it, because my grace is sufficient for you. And he said, my strength is made perfect in weakness. But this is what I want you to see. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. In other words, I have the power of Christ. Why? Because I'm living in fellowship. I'm doing the things that the Lord wants me to do. And even though I am weak, in my weakness I am strong because of His power. In other words, I don't have anything to boast about. There's nothing that I can brag on myself about, but it's about the Lord. Now, somebody would say, well, why would he boast? Why would he glory in this? May I say, because of the things that he was taught? If you go through hard times, if you go through, quote unquote, the school of hard knocks, and you don't learn something, may I say as kindly and as gently as I know how, you're stupid. I'm going to tell you something. It didn't take me long to realize when I was a little guy, I didn't particularly care for spankings. I didn't get a whole lot. Because I either got smart enough not to get caught, or I didn't do it where I could be seen, but I didn't want a spanking every day. Not the way that they were administered at my house. You know, I remember two spankings my stepdad gave to me. Both times is because I sassed my mother. One time, she said something to the effect, you know, I need you to make your bed up. And I said, you make it up. That was a mistake. Another time she told me to do something, and I said, I ain't doing that. And she said, okay, well, your dad gets home. Can I tell you that I don't think I've sassed my mother again to this day? Don't need to, all right? When you go through pain, sometimes you just learn. Can I tell you that I don't need to be shocked twice? Now, sometimes I may mess around with a little electrical, you know, maybe a wire or something on an outlet. But if it's got more than about 110 on it, it's time to turn the breaker off. I mean, there's some things that you just know you don't need to fool with. You know, I always had better sense than getting a ring with somebody like a Joe Frazier. You know, I mean, now there's somebody, you know, some people you can box. But you get in a ring with somebody like Smokin' Joe, you fixing to get knocked out. And you won't even see it coming. You know, I think I got him. And next thing you know, they got smelling salts under your nose. When God chooses to get our attention, he can get our attention, folks. He knows what your barley field is, and he knows how to burn it. And so, what was Paul taught? I think that he was taught over time with this thorn in the flesh. He was taught about the consequences of his sin. May I say that if you keep sinning and you keep sinning and you keep sinning and God has to keep spanking you for you doing the same thing over and over and over again, can I say you're not very bright? You're not getting the full blessings of God. You're not learning things. And sometimes when that happens, the chastisement gets heavier. Not only did he learn about the consequences of sin, but I believe that God taught him that infirmities helped me to develop his character. I don't think you have to worry about the Apostle Paul with his character. Why? Because God had developed that character. You say, well, what do you mean character? I believe, like the Apostle Paul said this, let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. If you've got character and you tell somebody you're going to do something, you do it. You don't lie to them. If you owe somebody something, you pay it. You know, if you've got a responsibility, you just do it. That's what character does. I've known of people and they'd say, well, you know, it don't matter if I slough off at work. Sure it does. You're being paid for something. Do the best. And if you're not willing to do it, then at least have enough character to go do something else. Be a man or woman of your word. What else did Paul say? He said, if you don't work, don't eat. Hey, we ought to want to earn our own bread. We ought to want to do that. Now, I understand there are circumstances. There are times when people need help, and we help people all the time at this church. We've got a gentleman that has had it put on his heart, and he has bought 30 turkeys. And we're going to be cooking those things, and we're going to be giving them to folks. Why? Because there's a need. But there comes a time when if you're an able-bodied person, you ought to go get you a job. There are times when we have the ability to do things, and if we don't do it, then there's a character issue. Uncle Bud Robinson used to say this, the best place to pray for potatoes is at the end of a hoe handle. Let's just do what we're supposed to do. And Paul said, hey, he's let this infirmity come upon me. Why? He's developing my character. Not only that, I believe that God allows pain to come into our life so that we can be sensitive to other people. You think about this. You have a need. The Lord meets that need through a person, and you think, boy, that's a great lady right there. She has helped me out so much. I thank the Lord for her. Then all of a sudden, there's somebody in your life that is introduced into your life, and they've got a need, and you've got an abundance of what they need, and you go, don't think I'm going to do that. Wait a minute, didn't you just get helped? Why don't you help somebody else? Can I tell you that the reason that God blesses you is so you can bless others? I heard one preacher say, he said, you see these hands? He said, I've had tens of millions of dollars that have come through these hands. And he said, can I tell you something else? I'm glad none of it stuck. We ought to be willing to give and give and give. Why? What's Jesus done for us? And the Apostle Paul, he had been taught quite a bit. Let me say this, if we're going to have the power, we've got to be submitted. It's essential. Paul went through the refining process. He said three different times, he said, Lord, remove it, please. Remove it, please. Remove it, please. And finally, God said, no, no, no. And he said, okay, I'll just live with it. And why can I live with it? Your grace is sufficient for me. I accept that. I'm good. But without that process of submission, can I say that the Apostle Paul would have never been the Apostle Paul? Do you realize that 12 of the books of the New Testament would not have been written? Do you realize that the New Testament pattern for a church would not have been put in place? We wouldn't know how to have church had Paul not put it in place in the epistles. You see, you don't really get your doctrine about church from the book of Acts. Now, there's a pattern in the book of Acts, but Acts is a transition period when you're moving from the Gospels into the church age. And that church was born in the book of Acts, and you look at all the things that they did, whether it was communion or soul winning, any of those things. But we really don't know how to go about that until you get over into the epistles. Somebody says, well, what in the world is an epistle? One kid raised his hand and said, it's the wife of an apostle. It's a letter that was written to us, all right? And so submission is essential. And what did he say? Most gladly. In other words, he said, hallelujah, I got an infirmity. Now, I can't explain it, but there are folks sitting in this church this morning, and you have gone through some things that I've never had to experience. And when I talk to you, I just hang my head in shame knowing that you're a better Christian than I am because of the way that you've handled things. I mean, I just think about some of the men and women in this church, and they have thanked God for the cancer that they have had. I'm just like, wow, that's just big. You say, why would you thank God for that? Because it's enabled me to share the gospel with people that I had never met before. And it gives you a platform because of the troubles that you've gone through. We've had folks in this church and maybe you've had to bankrupt and now you've come back and God has blessed you over and over and over and you're just a testimony and you're a trophy of God's grace. I'm telling you, when infirmities and difficulties come, we take pleasure in them. Why? That the power of God might rest upon us. So I ask you the question again. How are pearls formed? Are you going to thank God for a little grain of sand that He's allowed to get into your little oyster shell? When you begin to squirm a little bit, you begin to kind of get a little uneasy because of the trials that you're going through right now. Maybe you got a phone call last night, and the next thing you know, you've stepped into a tribulation that you didn't even have anything to do with the making of it, but now you're a part of it. You know what we do? We thank the Lord. Trials, tribulations, and thanksgiving, they all go together. I mean, that's a part of the same cake. We ought to thank God. A verse that I committed to memory early on is in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 18. In everything, there's no qualifications there, and there's no comma with an except and a blank and then another comma. In everything, give thanks. For this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. That's a powerful verse. That is a powerful verse. You ought to commit that to memory. So, don't wait till Thursday to begin the Thanksgiving. When there's a trial or a tribulation that steps up, Lord, let me get through this quick. It's like the one old time black preacher used to say, he said his favorite passage in the Bible, and it came to pass. You and I, we ought to say, Lord, I thank you that this came to pass, and let it pass quickly. Sometimes the old potters would put the clay on the treadle. They'd begin to shape it. They'd have to take time to pull the sticks and the rocks out to make that mud pliable. And sometimes the spinning would take a while. And the only thing I can think of is when I'm on that treadle, sometimes I'm thinking, Lord, spin it fast. Let me get through this fast. Let me learn it fast. Let me get close to you so that I can not have to endure it for a long time. But Lord, if I have to, I know your grace is there for me. And so we have pain, but we ought to take pleasure in them because we've got the power that God gives to every one of us. Let's stand together. Hmm.